Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. At this point in our career, 10 years in as It's the Real, it's not so crazy to get recognized at a music venue in New York City, on the streets of New York City, in the subway of New York City.
Right. We have a lane, and that lane is getting recognized in the subways of New York.
Yeah. We are the two guys in the orange vests. Come say hi.
We are Bill de Blasio and Mr. Met.
We are Enes Kanter and Kristaps Porzingis.
We are two rats fighting over a cold slice of pizza.
We are Henny and Palooza.
We are Yer and Yadadamin.
So, where it is weird is when you go to an event outside of the world that we live in and still get recognized.
Right. Like this weekend, we went up to my high school friend, your regular friend, Bob. Mm-hmm. His family had a pig roast.
A pig roast, for everyone out there, is when you insult a pig.
Yeah, like, hey, pig, look how dead you are, stupid pig.
Yeah, I wouldn't fuck you, pig, with B. Arthur's pig dick.
Yeah, pig.
It was a short roast. Actually, yeah. No, it was like a 10, 12-hour roast. I don't know how long you roast a pig.
It was slow-cooked, and it was delicious.
It really was. Our friend Bob was like, hey, that guy over there who I work with knows you guys. He recognizes you from online, and you should go say hey.
And we were like, all right. And he says, it's the guy with the purple shirt. There were two guys with purple shirts.
So Jeff went up to one and said, hey.
And he said,
where's the real?
Yeah, he said, I'm from New Zealand.
And then it was like, oh, cool. And we walked over to the other guy, and he was like, yo, I'm a longtime Twitter fan of you guys, and when I saw you were doing music, I really fucked with it. And I think meeting in person for him was a chance for him to really understand where we come from, what we're about, and what our sense of humor is, which is dope, because we're more than just Twitter, as you know. We're more than just the podcast or the music or the live events. We're a lot of things, and that was dope. The other event that we got recognized at was
our friend Big Waz. He's part of another podcast called The Basketball Friends, TBF.
Shout out to all those guys.
There's a million of them, by the way. There are so many basketball friends. And should we say who they are? They're Jade, Mariano, Black Trey, Zach Harper, Big Waz. Am I missing anybody else?
There were a lot of people in
there.
There
were
building.
So many people. Pablo Torre was there.
It was a dope night. They did a live podcast at the Gotham Comedy Club here in New York. It's funny because Waz moved out to L.A. like a week before. And then
yeah,
course,
we did the going away party, and suddenly he's back here and waiting to be celebrated by all of his friends.
So we didn't know what we were going to do. He was just like, hey, can you give me 10 minutes? And we were like, sure. We wouldn't be surprised if we had to like rap battle him or talk basketball or whatever. He just honestly wanted us to go up there and take some time and riff. And we did. There was a lot of love in the building. We got a great response. And we went to the after party downstairs afterwards.
Ow.
And one guy in particular walked up to us and he was like, yo, I've seen you guys retweeted by a whole lot of people that I know and respect. And I always thought, why do I need not one, but two more white guys talking about hip-hop in my life?
Right. He was like, there's a million of you. Am I playing him or me in this situation?
Play him.
Okay, so there's a million of you guys out there, like Peter Rosenberg or whoever else, white guys talking about hip-hop, and I don't need, you know, these two more.
But what did he say afterwards?
He said that there's a lot of guys he finds funny and that we were funnier than them and that seeing us on stage really made him a real fan and that it's $20 more in our pocket anytime we ever do an event in New York.
He was like, you got a fan for life.
Shout out to him because, like, one, he was honest, and two, because he's rocking with us now.
And something really clicked with us right there, which was that there may be people out there who don't know our story, who don't know the complete It's the Real arc. And for anyone out on the West Coast in particular, because we have a show coming up on November 2nd, we're going to give you guys a chance to really get to know us. For an hour before showtime, we will be there for an exclusive Q&A session, an exclusive meet and greet, an exclusive chance for those people who buy the VIP tickets to really get to know It's the Real. This podcast every week is a chance for us to help share someone else's story. And that could be Angie Martinez, it could be Cardi B, it could be Lenny S., it could be
Lil Uzi Vert, whoever.
Whoever it is.
It could be you.
It could, well, you know, are you still playing the other guy?
Yeah.
Okay, it could be one of us.
Yeah.
Our show on November 2nd at the Bootleg Theater in Los Angeles is going to have our music, and it is going to have podcast elements, and it is going to have a lot of bits and stories and a lot of fun, but it's also going to have an hour before for the VIPs that's inspirational, that's informational, that's a chance to really get stories from two guys who have seen and been through a lot in 10 years, and we really want to connect with you guys on another level. So go to itsthereal.com right now. And if you're not going to be in the building, if you're not even going to be in Los Angeles, please spread the word to your friends and family and let them know that It's the Real is coming to town, and we're going to put on a hell of a show. Again, an hour beforehand for the VIPs, and for general admission, a full hell of a show. I don't even know how late it's going to go because I don't think we have a deadline. But no. Go to itsthereal.com right now and get those tickets. Jeff, who's on the podcast today?
Today on the podcast, we have Cootie and Chike.
Hey, longtime friends. Longtime friends of the room.
Cootie and Chike are the music video directors behind such classic, hashtag classic, videos like Kanye's Through the Wire.
Just stop right there.
I'm going to stop right there.
You should stop right there. Go listen to the podcast, guys.
Yeah.
No, actually, there's so much more starting from like Cootie's from the Wild Hundreds in Chicago.
Yeah, and how he had a gun literally shoved into his face and survived that. How Chike grew up in New Orleans and an alligator almost bit his arm off.
But there's the professional stuff too, like when they shot a music video for Erykah Badu down in Dallas where she was naked, when they had the 30 for 30 documentary that they did for ESPN Benji.
They've got a movie coming out. It is out now.
We had a really exciting time with these guys catching up and hearing their full journey, and we're really excited to share it with you guys. Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right after. I was going to say right now, but I really switched it up on you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Right after you leave a comment and a review on iTunes, because that is how you get new listeners.
Wait, are you still that guy from Long Island right now?
Hey, I'm that guy from Long Island right now, and I'm telling you, leave a comment and a review, that's the same thing, on iTunes. So that we can write, so that we, meaning, wait. Okay, just leave a review. Perfect.
Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up, Eric, a.k.a. Super Mario Brothers, Time Warp, a.k.a. I'm on a new level.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Bloody Shoes, a.k.a. Bruno Mollies.
Hey, it's Cootie, Chi-Town, Southside, Wild Hunted, you know where it is.
I can't compete with y'all, man. Yo, it's Chike, you know what I'm saying, Third Ward, New Orleans representing.
Yeah, and this is a waste of time, but it's the real. Bang, bang. We wanted to start talking about the good days of MTV, right? So you guys first met while you were at MTV, right?
Well, Chike worked there. I never worked there. We just started doing Through the Wire there.
Right,
he was sneaking in MTV sneaking for in. Me. But other than that, he worked there.
But you were in the building.
Yeah, in the building.
Did you go to the Christmas party?
Yeah. Oh, man. The holiday parties were crazy. I mean, that was like you spent your whole week looking forward to the holiday party with the outfit you was going to get and everything, and you was coming up, too.
Yeah, listen, like, the whole industry shuts down on, like, December 1st, so, like, you're only looking forward to the holiday party.
And nothing, it was no holes bar, it was no rules, it was like Vegas. Whatever happens at the holiday party stays at the holiday party.
And that's, like, rich MTV.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah, it was paper. Like, it was money in the game,
like,
then.
Now
yeah.
It's like they have it, like, in the building.
Nah, this shit was, like, Hammerstein. It was, like, wait, it was on 34th Street.
Yeah.
It was just, like, lobster tails already picked out, to just flesh of lobster in abundance.
People making a lot of mistakes that night.
Yeah, you know, for like, sure.
Yeah.
A lot.
So what were you doing there?
I was doing motion graphics. So basically, I was a junior designer. I would package up the shows. So like, read this like Rockin' Jack Baseball, or like, I did even the VMAs or different shows. I would sort of meet with the producers of the show, and then I'd help devise like a look of the show. So like bumpers when they go in and out of commercial, the show open, interstitials, like all the lower thirds. So just kind of give it the show its entire look.
Did they
look.
Stick you in some room with an Avid like somewhere?
Nah, so I actually, because it was all art, like the way they worked over there for us, we all were artists. So we were like in a big open space, and it was just the illest artists. Like it was cats that were dope typography, dope graphic designers, and they took the shit serious. Like they were winning mad awards at the time, so it was, we were all about, like, it was like less about MTV and more about artists really just trying to make their mark. Like everybody who was in that room was like super successful.
How did you end up meeting Chike and sneaking into the building?
Okay, well, you know, from Chicago, and in Chicago I started to film Kanye, you know, and he wound up moving to New York. So I'm like, I got to get to New York. So I moved to New York. And when I came here, you know, we was day-to-day filming. And this girl, Yasmin Richard, knew I had all this footage. So she was like, can you, you know, come in? And she wanted to put the footage in the you here first. And And when we went, we were working on that. She was like, I want to introduce you to like all the, you know, blacks, you know, black people that work at MTV. I'm yeah. like, bet. Let's go. And we went, and Chike was one of the first people that I met.
He wasn't the only black guy at MTV. Okay, just making sure.
Yeah. We had a little crew, though. Yeah. It wasn't many, though. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely wasn't
many. So,
I met them all but like, that day. That second. Like,
Bill Bellamy.
Sway.
Ananda Lewis. Yeah.
Caduce.
Yeah, Caduce. So, Chicago born and raised, Southside. What was growing up out there like?
It was one of them things, like Chicago is a real segregated city, you know what I mean? When it comes to race, when it comes to gangs, when it comes to, you know, just period, we segregated. I mean, even light skin to dark skin blacks, you know what I mean? And growing up was, you know, I couldn't, there's like a lot of places I couldn't go, you know what I mean? But it was the hood, you know what I mean? My mom, and luckily I have my mother and father, who kept me out of a lot of trouble, even though I rebelled against that, be out with my friends doing, you know, doing whatever we weren't supposed to be doing.
Right.
But you know, God saved me through all that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Between my mother's prayers and God, you know, he looked out for me, so
I didn't go through much. Did you see life beyond Chicago?
No, not really. You know, in Chicago, you pretty much stay right where you at. If you're on the block, that's where you usually be. But see, I would travel from my block to go around like downtown or go to High Park and places like that, because I didn't want to really stay in the hood. So I just venture out, you know what I mean, to like different parties and things like that. But, you know, not as far as traveling, wasn't none of that.
And what was the first camera you got a hold of?
The first camera was my mom's camera. It was, well, my father actually bought it, and I just seen some video of him doing a lot of filming back in the, when he first bought it. I always thought my mother was the one. My father was doing it as well. It was a VHS, yep. You know, whatever, Sony, whatever. You know? And I remember I took it one day, and I just started filming, like, all the pictures that was around in the living room, and I'm like, oh, I went to the radio and I turned on, what's the name of them dudes? Boys to Men.
Yeah.
Mama, you know, I love. So I'm going around with the camera real, like, I guess cinematic.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like hitting the pictures and then
through the wire before through the wire.
really. Through the wire before through the wire. And I showed my sister and mother them, and I'm talking about day bawled out crying. And I was like, oh, what's this?
Yeah.
I just drew this emotion out of that. Oh, man. And I'll be in high school, too. This guy, Terry Davis, was like the radio TV teacher. So he was like showing me stuff. And my sister, she did radio TV before me. She's 2 years older than me. So in grammar school, I would go up there because they had an after school thing. And I was more like cock blocking. You know, my brother like, you go up there after school, make sure. So I'm more like the cock, but I was learning and seeing stuff. And I'm like, yo, this is, you know. So my freshman year, Terry Davis put me on the camera at my orientation. So I'm like, working the camera, my orientation, like I already went to the school.
So, you know,
that helped me out. That helped me out a lot. My sister, Tanya Simmons, she really, you know, did a lot for me. Like, she don't even know what she did.
Were you filming other stuff outside of school?
No. Besides the stuff I might shoot with my mom camera, other than that, I was just had the camera. But then I remember one time we got to use the camera, and I went and shot my boy Hollis Rock and Danny Cox. They was a rap group, and we went behind the famous mural, you know, with Harold Washington and Jesse. And so we went right there and we shot like a little guest video, which I got to see what that said. I see that.
So tell me about, like, how did Channel Zero start?
Okay, Channel Zero was an idea this guy Danny Sorge had. You know, I used to do stand-up comedy. I was with, y'all might not believe it just off why I'm talking now, but.
Yeah, no, we don't find you funny at all.
Exactly. Danny, he had an idea. He said, man, I got this camera. Let's go around and, like, you know, interview people outside the concert, you know, and you do the interviews. I'm like, I'm with it. But I said, let's go in the concert. Let's go in there and interview the artists and the people outside. So it was a Busta Rhymes concert, so we snuck in the concert, period. And we filming us doing everything.
You snuck in with your camera?
With the camera.
Yo, that's so on brand for you.
I
know,
yeah. I mean, with Busta Rhymes, he came out his dressing room, we right there with the camera running, bang. He was like, man, you can't be doing that. Right. Man, y'all erase that tape, right? And back in the day, VHS, you had the only way you can erase is by recording over.
Right.
So we was recording over the tape. Of course, we erased it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we had all the audio from Busta Rhymes just talking garbage to us and all. So all you see is the floor and you hear Busta. So we aired that episode. And we aired Busta Rhymes just like, what do you mean, y'all, you know, just going off on us. Something that you would be embarrassed about.
Right.
But people loved it. That was on Channel 19 Public Access. But so that was it. And then Danny kind of like, you know, started cutting hair more. You know, it was a barbershop Mellow Swing we would go that he cut at. That's where I met Kanye. All of that happened right there.
And more importantly, it's where you met Ivan.
Ivan, yeah. Yes. But, you know, Ivan was definitely.
Yeah. But the Channel Zero stuff traveled. Like, yeah. Young Guru was here yesterday, right? And he was like, when we were at Howard, those videos came around and, like, we all, like, were watching them and were fascinated by them. So did you know that? Did you know that those videos, like, had legs?
So if we shoot an interview with Shaq when he came to Chicago, we'd be like, here, take this, you know, tape. And he'd take it. And everybody we gave the tape to, I remember like a year or two after that, I seen Shaq again. I'm like, yo, Shaq, what's up? It's Cootie, Channel Zero. He's like, Cootie, Channel Zero, I know you are, man. Oh, the fight. He started talking about the whole episode. Him, Method Man, everybody would do that. Man. So we knew that, you know, we had something.
Louisiana.
Yeah.
New Orleans. What was growing up down there like?
It was amazing. I had a very unique experience because my mother and my aunt, they really, I think, had a vision for me, you know what I'm saying? And for them, I was able to kind of, I grew up in the Third Ward in Jackson and Dry, so it's a pretty notorious neighborhood. But they sent me to a private school. I was like the only black in my class, since I can remember. And one time, one of my boys came.
So we had two blacks. Sway wasn't there.
Yeah. Sway wasn't there.
Deuce was not there.
He wasn't there.
Yeah.
But it was a tripped out experience because I went to that school from kindergarten all the way to 12th grade. So I'd go to literally, you know, an all-white school and come back to an all-black neighborhood. You know what I mean? And it was just like the extremes. Like that, my school was like 90210. It was like an extreme private school. And my neighborhood was an extreme. Like cats is getting murdered. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it would be like, and then in the middle of that, I go to I call it a second home, but like my nursery was the Jewish Community Center. So like I literally grew up at the JCC. You know what I'm saying? So I had a weird cultural exchange, which was dope because I think it's given me a perspective of the world that's different from most people.
Totally.
So I have empathy with a lot of different cultural groups. You know what I mean?
How big was the arts for you in that private school?
You know, we had an art program. It wasn't huge, but where I kind of got my mother, this is a funny story, because I used to wake up and I used to always do, like, not like most kids, I wouldn't really run to the television with the cartoons. I'd go and get construction paper and I was always building stuff. And so but I love sports, so she made like this kind of bargain with me, like if I wanted to play sports I had to go to like arts camp, because she recognized that I was actually talented at art. And so I was like, all right, because I didn't mind the art, you know what I mean? So I was like, cool. And it's funny because that's what I wound up falling. I mean, the sports didn't really work out, but, so I wound up falling back on the art. And but I actually went to this the program that had the biggest impact on me was this other private school called Country Day, and they had a creative arts camp that I would go to almost every summer. And that camp, like, really, I mean, we were doing creating all these kind of paper mache masks and playing instrument. Like it was a dope experience.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So if it wasn't filmmaking, what else would it be creatively?
Cooking.
Cooking?
I definitely would have probably gone to culinary school, yeah.
Are you still nice now?
I'm decent.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I like the two mom. I'll let the people speak on that, you know what I'm saying? But I do a little something in the future, yeah.
Back to Chicago, you meet Kanye West. Mm-hmm. And what are the circumstances of that? Like, he's how old?
He's about
45.
Yeah.
He might have been 17, 18 around there.
What is it about him that speaks to you?
I mean, I remember the first time when he came up to the barbershop, because the barbershop used to be No ID's studio, where they'd be, and then Dave and Brennan, who was a group called Mellow Swing, bought the studio and made it a barbershop. But I remember Kanye came up there with Aisha the Izzo, the track. And, you know, I'm like, I'm a Michael Jackson fan. I'm like, what's that? Ooh, like, what? You know, that sample. And that was, like, my first introduction. And then I would, like, be with, like, a Cap One or somebody going around Chicago because they was, like, the emerging artists at the time. And we would go to Kanye's crib to get beats, and they doing stuff with him. And I just noticed how charismatic he was and how, you know, he got in front of the camera and started rapping. And then, you know, he was that. I'm like, this dude is this the one? He the one that's gonna make it. And then he had a show with the Go Getters, GLC and Timmy G. Mm-hmm. And I just seen him on stage. I'm like, no, this dude is he is just like everything was just registered. I'm like, I got to do like a Hoop Dreams on him because I just seen Hoop Dreams was crazy. And I'm like, oh, this would be a dope Hoop Dreams because that was what you know that's one of my favorite docs.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying, because of the time they took to make it and they stuck with it and they made it happen. And that's pretty much what we got, you know, with Kanye. But like, he made it.
Yeah, but so AG. You're doing that. Do you have, like, a job on the side? Do you have, like, a timetable for yourself?
Well, yeah, well, you know, I was doing comedy.
Yeah.
So I was professional. I did BET's Comic View 2 seasons.
Crazy.
Yeah, so I was, like, traveling the world doing it. I was making money, but that's when I hated it. But I'm going to tell you, the first time I went up, though, I'm like, okay, my boy's like, you funny, man. Let's write some jokes. And Deion Cole was one of my good buddies. Deion and
crazy.
Yeah, and B. Cole, because B. Cole went to school with me. So I used to, like, we used to, you know, talk about each other in the hallway, and I used to kill him. I'm like, he doing comedy? And Deion? You know, so I was like, I'm about to do it. And the first person to bring me on stage was Bernie Mac.
Whoa.
So I went to Cotton Club every Monday. Used to do open mic. And Bernie Mac would be in the front. You come through the door, Bernie Mac is right down the stage. And this guy, Jimmy Spinks, if y'all remember Car Wash, the big guy in Car Wash, he'd be at the bar. He was like his host. I mean, his side host. And then if you come in with something bogus, Bernie would get on you or comedians. But so this one guy went up before me, and he bombed. And when he was, you know, when nobody was laughing, he was like, and just left the stage. He's like, I'm gone. And then Bernie Mac went up there and said, man, you don't leave the stage. You stay up here. You do this. You know, he went off on him. He's like, you do it, man. You going to do it. You know, so he was just giving me all what I needed.
Yeah.
And the confidence to go up there. Because he told me what to do. He said, you got to, you know, and I give it to Bernie. But, you know, it's God working through him. Just like, so I went up there and I rocked it. And I started doing comedy from there out. And like I said, when I started making money, when it became a job, I just stopped liking it.
You really?
Know what I mean? It was like, I got to go through this old folks home. And I got to go do this, you know. So, and then I really fell in love with filmmaking. I just seen how people, like, reacted to Channel Zero and reacted to footage. I showed them Kanye footage. And even Cheek A, when I met Cheek A, mm-hmm. I showed them Channel Zero. And he was like, yo, that was
the craziest shit I ever seen. I was like, yo, but more so than what they were shooting was the stylistically how they were shooting it. And in the whole, like, just the composition, the way he would, the shots that he was getting, the lo-fi, like, typography and everything. It was like this, the pace of it. It was just something that I had never really seen before, except for, like, maybe, like, Liquid Television, that was the closest thing. But this was, like, doing that, but, like, within the urban landscape, it was retarded. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it blew my mind. And then that's what gave us the confidence, because I was like, man, whoever's doing this, they're thinking on a whole another level to be able to put this together. And I could relate to some of the things that they were, that's our conversation started. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Real quick, I got to shout out Titty Head Ted and Sean. I mean, and Ted and Sonny.
Yeah.
They were a part of Channel Zero, mm-hmm. too, as we was coming. I always talk about Danny just because, you know, me and him kept it going and it was moving a lot on it, but it was them guys as well.
Yeah,
so I had to give them shout out.
And so you guys actually, like, connect in New York.
Yaz brought him literally to my desk. You know, like I was explaining the other day, like it takes me a while to warm up to people. Like, I'm not the type of person that, like, we meet and then we kicking it. Like, it takes a while, you know what I mean? So, but he actually wound up kicking it with my roommate, and my roommate was mad introverted at the time. Like, he didn't really go out at all. But he was in the streets all the time. I'm like, damn, this dude must be super cool to have my roommate in the streets like this. You know what I'm saying? And so then, I said, let me go out with him. And we went out and kicked it. Like, I saw what it was, his personality. And I was like, dang, we probably kicked it every day since then.
Yeah,
you know
what I'm
saying?
Yeah.
And we really just kicked it for like a year before that conversation happened about Channel Zero. We had probably kicked it for like a year. And then I saw the Channel Zero, and that's when we started developing. And he called me about, and he was in LA with Kanye, and hit me up talking about like, man, we got this video idea, you know, because he had seen what I was doing with the motion graphics. Like, we got this video idea, we got this concept. Would you be interested? We don't have any money.
And you said, but would you said you
be, no. All right, I was like, man, fuck y'all. Yeah. But I was like, man, hell yeah. And you know, he was like, you know, can you just help us bring it to life? You know what I mean? Because they had all all the materials necessary already. He already had all this footage he shot. You know what I'm saying? They just needed a way to just kind of put a visual to it.
Was there any part of you that was just like, okay, we're doing this at my job. Like, I don't want to get fired. Like, can we... I mean, was there any part of you that was just like...
Nah, because no, I'm not... That's not even my personality. So, like, if I like something, I'm like, I'm balls to the wall. Pause. Like, I'm not thinking about getting fired. I'm just like, what do we need to do to make it happen? And plus, I knew too many people in the building, so and we were already doing I already had side hustles going on anyway, so this was like the smallest hustle I was worried about. So I was like, but then we brought the troops together, you know what I'm saying? And we was up in, like, I had a cat at Nickelodeon, I had my boy VH1 Jason, who was at Nickelodeon, hands on the flame. So these are machines that at the time you were spending thousands of dollars an hour just to get on, and dude was young like us, so everybody was like, everybody knew what we had, knew it was special, wanted to be a part of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So let's put this into perspective. You were following Kanye around for how long?
For on and off, you know,
right?
But
yeah,
mainly
yeah.
When he moved to New York is when we was day to day more so.
But how many like VHS tapes did you have of him?
Man, not even VHS. I got the mini DV.
Oh yeah,
yeah. We had the Canon joint, and dude, I got so many
like bags,
duffel bags, and shoe boxes full, and you know.
And I'm gonna guess
and everybody that I was filming, because I film a J.I.V. or Takitha, the First Lady of Wu Tang. Yeah. I just fell in love with filming.
And I'm going to guess no interns to catalog all this stuff.
Still, like, to this day, we haven't cataloged. We kind of started that. We realized, man, we got to get somebody in here to break this stuff.
And mini DV is like long gone. But like, do you have to like convert them?
No,
to,
we
like,
got like a, we got. They still have decks, so you just connect the deck and you can route it to your computer.
Yeah, right.
And so it's pretty easy, but it is old and it's sensitive. The tapes are mad sensitive. The heads on them are real sensitive. So you have to
see. That's a pause.
Yeah, that's a pause. That's a bigger pause than my last pause. You know what I'm saying? I thought about it for a second. Yeah. Like, you can't. So the thing is, once you open up one pause, you got to be conscious throughout. Right?
Yeah. You have all this footage, and the goal, like, ultimately was to do, like, a Hoop Dreams. Yeah. But now, how does the idea come to take all that and put it into, like, a 4-minute video for Kanye?
I mean, well, like he was saying, when we was watching this one Hype, he had the accident. I went to L.A. We was watching this Hype Williams video, and Kanye was like, "Man, I hate that how he was doing the letterbox in 3/4." A lot of videos started doing that.
You know
what I mean? He's like, "I don't like that. That's whack." And I was like, "Well, let's do ours in a Polaroid. Let's make ours look like a Polaroid on the screen." He was like, "Man, we could do the whole video. We could do Through the Wire like that." I was like, "Yeah, we could put the documentary footage in the Polaroids." And then I went to this editor and just start editing up the story. Like, I just did a whole edit of the song with the whatever clips that I picked, and then that's what we call Chica.
What was the process like, and how long did it take to put together?
The process took a while, just because of our approach of how we had to do it and trying to figure out, like, you know, at the time the technology wasn't as, especially with like keying and green screening, it wasn't as easy as it is now. So it was just a lot of trial and error to try to get this board right. I mean, and what we winded up actually coming up with is totally different than what we started with. It's even totally different than what we actually showed Dane. We actually kind of used what we showed to get more money to actually go and do it properly. So it kind of took us back to the drawing board again. But
so the initial idea was what then?
So the initial, well, so basically, Cootie had all this. They had cut up all the footage already to kind of tell the story. We just need to figure out the visual to put on it, and then I kind of had come up with some mock-ups. But then they had come back to New York, and we were all sitting around in MTV looking at some of the stuff that I had designed and going through some. And we were looking at a magazine, and I don't know if it was either you or Kanye. Kanye saw this Adidas ad that had like this these photos collaged on like a cork board, and that's kind of, we just ran with that. Like, it looked exactly like what really was perfect.
Yeah.
And so we just kind of, you know, took it and made it our own.
Which is why he now works with Adidas. Gotcha. Okay, understood. Yeah.
Whoa. Right.
God works in weird ways, guys.
Yeah, yeah. It premiered at 4040, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about dope. That night.
That night was crazy. Like, that's when I'm like, Mama, I made it type of nights, just because you were in this room, at least for me. You know, Cootie probably a little bit different because he had been interacting with a lot of these people in Chicago at that level. I had only kind of seen them coming in through MTV. And even at the time, Kanye, we didn't look at Kanye like that because he was just one of us trying to hustle him right now. You know,
he's still
saying?
One of us.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, it was like nobody had done anything yet. Right. But, right. I mean, he was the furthest because he had produced these tracks. But you just, you know, it was one of us. So he could still come into the building and nobody knew who the hell he was. But, man, so be up to be in there, and then you have like Dame Dash. Like,
and what was the reaction like in the room when like the video came on?
Oh, I mean, chill bumps are just there's everything, because you know, we did. I think one of the main things that helped Kanye was the EPK we did. You know what I mean? We put together this whole EPK. Like, I didn't know, that was the thing. The title was I didn't know.
Yeah.
So we took all the like raps that he was like just rapping to people.
Yep.
And everybody like, dang, like Pharrell snapping. So Pharrell was the one to say, like, I didn't know. We keep coming back to Pharrell or Channel Zero style. Yeah. Like, I didn't know. Every time he wraps up, he come back, I didn't know. And then at the end, we said, now you know. So that right there set it off. And then we hit you with the video. Boom. It was like.
I had to show it twice. Man. It's one of the ones when, that's when you know you got something. Like, now cats be premiering the wackest videos. I'm like, why everybody, like, what are you doing that for? You know what I'm saying? But we knew we had some. You know you have something special when you're directing. And it's not like an arrogant thing. It's just a thing where probably most directors have when you just have a bit, just like you already see your story from beginning to end, you already see the impact that story can have. You know what I mean? So you've already calculated it. So you kind of know, this is going to, like, man, the crowd's going to, just like, timing. Like, he knows the comedian. He knows he has beats. He knows when people are going to laugh at certain things. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. You know how the audience is going to react.
Yeah. But like Chike said, Mama, I made it. We didn't make it there, right? So after that, a big hype. Yeah. Next thing we know, can't put the song out. Yeah. Chaka Khan won't clear the sample. We like, huh? Chaka Khan won't clear the sample. I mean, for weeks, to the point I went to the meeting with the lawyer, and he like, we told her he's from Chicago, he almost died. You know, not even saying Chaka, it was probably like her people. So, but they wouldn't clear it, right? And I used to do these barbecues every Sunday at my crib in Harlem when I moved there, and Kanye and John Legend, everybody would just come through because we just, hanging out. And one day my boy J.B. Marshall brought Chaka Khan's son through. And we like kicking it. They said, we like, let's show him the video. So we show him the video. He seen the video. He was like, oh, man, I got to show my mom this. He was like, can I take this? We like, yeah, do it. Boom. He took it. And I said yesterday, it might have been a week later that she said she cleared it, but it might have been a month. But I just a week. Yeah. You know,
that's a week later. Crazy.
So, the next day she
cleared. Yeah.
She cleared it.
Wait, so you make it seem like it's like a very casual thing, but was it actually a really calculated thing where you were like, we can't get to Chaka. Right. Let's get her kid.
Totally uncalculated. No,
God. I mean, JB, he had to meet him. JB from Chicago too, so I don't know how they met, what happened with that, but he brought them through.
Mad random.
So
mad,
like, random. It's so easy for like young people now in 2017 to be like, well, it's Kanye West, but back then, like, Chicago's not on the map like that. Mm-hmm. Like Common, obviously, mm-hmm. but it's not even like B Common. This is like, mm-hmm. Still sort of localized. Mm-hmm. What did it mean for? And not just somebody who was like your guy's age, your guy's friend, your guy's circle to make it, but somebody from the Midwest to make it on Rockefeller Records, which is the biggest thing, like short of like Bad Boy, right? Like, but what did it mean?
With us, it was like we was on a journey. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like it was like we was all, every step we were right there. So it just, I mean, it was great. But it was great for all of it. It was like, it wasn't a thing. Like, oh, shit, he made it. Oh, man, look at, it was like, we're making it and things are happening. And, so I never looked back and said, oh, dang, he made it. That's crazy.
Not even when
he was going to make it. I already seen him make it. I already seen him winning Grammys. I seen everything that happened. So it really wasn't, no shock to me. It was like, okay, yeah.
What was training day like?
Oh yeah, that was crazy. Well, at first, you know, we really couldn't shoot in the you know, in the arena, because they, if you shoot
when
an arena,
when has that ever stopped you though?
Right, no, it did. Right. I snuck the shot. It did though. So we there, we backstage, and when he went out to the front, so we all out there, and then Dame up there, and then Kanye come out. I'm like, I just turned the camera on and went on the stage with the camera, like I'm getting this,
yeah,
and shot it, and that's what happened.
I mean, what you got to realize is, like, right now it's such a different time, because now content is king, like everything, YouTube's and all this. There wasn't YouTube's around. Nobody was caring about. You didn't even, like, the cameras weren't even as sophisticated now, where it was that easy just to have a point and click that's like looks like a camera, but it's shooting high quality video.
Right, so, like, it's not like a real subtle thing.
Right,
to have a camera.
Obvious, yeah, you have a camera. So like, and it was, and you looked at it as like, who not the normal person didn't just have somebody that was, you know, that was like, yeah, Muhammad Ali,
right,
would have somebody, but other than that, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like, yeah, the fact that you know, he was doing something super innovative that people started recognizing, even Dame would tell him, and like, but now it's like commonplace, right?
Yo, you know? I talk about this all the time, like Spiff TV, you know, who ran around with like Ross, and now is with French and everything. Like, it was such a weird thing to have him like trail, you know, Ross, yeah, around. It was really rare, you know, for you to like follow Kanye around. Today, it's just like everyone's got, yeah, one. You know?
Even, right, yeah, Scooby Doo on the corner,
yeah,
got somebody following him, personal Instagram photographer. You don't even know who dude is.
Yeah. How did you guys decide? Okay, you do one video and it's out of this world phenomenal. Were you guys like, cool, now we're a team and we're going to do everything moving forward?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. We thought it was going to be like, you know, how like Outkast was rocking with, but Brian Barber, you know what I mean? It just, that's what it felt like it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean? So next up is Jesus Walks or Two Words or?
Next up was All Falls Down.
All Falls which Down, we didn't, right,
do,
right.
But we did Two Words. We didn't put it out. We did, shot Two Words and actually had the video for a minute, but the single was All Falls Down. So they,
right,
came out with that we didn't, Chris Milk did that.
Right,
which,
right,
is,
right,
a great director, but we were supposed to do it.
We were supposed to.
Yeah. In doing Two Words and Jesus Walks, that was, again, not really a big budget, right? Like, that was just sort of...
Yeah, now we never, yeah, had a budget, really, with a big budget with Kanye.
I can tell you the story of Jesus Walk, though, because you know Jesus Walk was... Kanye did two Jesus Walk videos before he called about, because I wrote the treatment before we even did Through the Wire. We had that treatment already ready for Jesus Walk. I mean, before the accident and everything.
Because that was the one that spoke to you.
Yeah, that was definitely the one that spoke to me. And Kanye had a good idea to have Dave Chappelle play Jesus. So we like, oh, so we wrote this whole story and how we gonna make it happen. And you know,
did you know Dave?
Yeah, we knew Dave. We used to kick it with Dave all the time. Cause we would go to the show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And hang out Liz. Shout out to Liz. But when after he did the two videos, me and Chike leaving out the club 4 a.m. on a Friday morning, right? 4 a.m, and I get a call from Kanye. And I'm like, oh, what kind? What he want? You know what I'm saying? Because I knew he wasn't.
It can
ready.
Only be good news at 4 a.m.
Right, boy. Yeah. So I'm like, yo, what's up, man? He said, man, you know, the videos I did didn't give me the feeling. I need the soul wing. It wasn't the soul, wasn't any. He's like, man, let's do the one that we wrote a while back. I'm like, okay. When you trying to make this happen? He was like, Sunday. I'm like, and I know Kanye hate for you to say you can't do nothing, or, you know, so I'm like, I bet. Well, I said, well, we got a shoot in Chicago. We in New York. He like, all right, cool. So we get up, me and Chike early. Chike calling around for film. I'm calling crew and my people in Chicago.
Because we shot film then. You know what I mean? We had bought the 16mm camera. So
from
we
that.
Used to, from that. Yeah.
I got Frey help us get that.
Yeah.
So we wind up, he wound up not calling us back to after 7, you know what I'm saying, p.m. And, you know, we ain't got no money or nothing.
Right.
So when he called us back with the credit card, now we had to switch everything up to L.A. because they 3 hours behind, get stuff shipped from L.A., get our plane tickets, fly to Chicago the next day, get locations. We had to teach the kids how to do the Jesus Walk with my girl Shocky, which is the dance that I came up with, by the way, the Jesus Walk.
What's crazy is we actually shot more footage than even made the video.
Yeah,
like, we actually had to
footage.
Take stuff, didn't even make the cut.
Yeah.
We had a
Chinese Jesus.
Yeah. We had a whole scene in the jewelry store.
Yeah,
didn't
with
even
the Chinese
get,
Jesus.
Yeah.
But we made it happen, and
By Sunday.
By Sunday.
That's the Lord's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
exactly.
So I'm trying to figure out, like, what was the concept of the video? Because you had this extra scene with the Chinese Jesus. You had Dave Chappelle, who was supposed to be Jesus, but then wasn't. And then you had the white Jesus, who was actually in the video.
And was really mixed. So the Jesus in the video is the Danny, who I've been telling you all about. From
yeah.
Zero.
Yeah, yeah.
That was him?
Danny is Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was Kayad. He was like, let's get Daddy to play Jesus. We like, bet. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Of course, Danny came late.
Kids walk across water.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
He was in Mellow Swings.
But the concept was like that. You know that, like, you know, people put, when they think about Jesus, they just think strict and think like Jesus is us. Jesus is cool. Jesus is whatever you want Jesus to be, because he's there for us. He's you know, I'm not religious, but I'm real spiritual. But Jesus is of God to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that makes us all of God. And we want to show that Jesus is really whoever you want him to be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That, you know, of God.
Right.
And that was like the thought. And that he was cool and funny. And you ain't got to be serious all the time. But he will look out.
Right.
You know, like the refrigerator scene with no food, and he closing and open up his food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, then he don't even say thank you to Jesus. He just grabs the food and walks past Jesus. You know what I mean? Without saying thank you. And the guy with the crutches, which is Ice Gree, old school Ice Gree.
Yeah, yeah.
He tapped him. He next, you know, he doing a Jesus walk past. You know, so we wanted to make it comical and just show you that he, you know, it's good to have Jesus in your life.
And how involved was Kanye with the editing?
I mean, Kanye's always super involved in every aspect, you know what I mean? Which is, I think, that's definitely something that I think a lot of artists could actually use it and take, you know, advice from, because he cares about the product that's coming out, you know what I mean? We've worked with a lot of artists after that, and have worked with artists that don't have that same, you know, sense of being on top of their product, which is a shame, because they should, you know what I mean?
I know when we did the Through the Wire, when I was in there with the editor for that, and me and the editor was getting into it. Cause she like, what are you? I'm like, no, just put that there, and then put this here, and that picture there. This, they was like, no, this don't. Right? He like, no, this don't work like that. I'm like, well, just do it. So I'm like, with G. Robinson and Kanye came in, I just knew that it wasn't gonna be good.
I'm like,
oh, this is gonna be. They ain't gonna like it. So Kanye came in. We played it, and he was like, oh my God, I gotta show G. Ran out, grabbed G Robinson. They both came in. They was like, oh, this is incredible. I'm like, word. So I was happy about that. But like you said, Kushner, this guy Kushner, this editor, you know, we all work real tight with Kush.
Yeah.
Kanye was definitely on top of it.
The Webster Hall show, where there is a guy in a bear suit, Dave Chappelle, that you convinced to actually wear the bear suit. Tell me what the conversation was like.
Well, I don't think that somebody said I convinced him to wear the bear suit.
Yeah, you and J.I.D.
It's probably more J.I.D. I mean, of course, I probably was like, yeah, that'd be dope if you do it. But I can't even remember that conversation, because I probably was filming J.I.D. telling him to do it. I'll go look for that footage for y'all.
Yeah. Yo, you guys need an intern to catalog all your footage.
right, exactly.
The first time I met you guys was at Kanye's first Grammys, and for Chicago it seemed like a huge celebration for everybody. And you know, we're talking about, like, even like for Barry, who was security, for Gabe, you know, doing PR, 88 Keys and Nabil and A-Track and everybody there, it felt like something. What was that moment like for you guys? Like it's, you know, the biggest artists having the biggest week, you know.
Right, yeah, no, it was, you know, and can't forget Mama West.
Yeah, know? No kidding.
No, it was a great day. It was a great day for everybody, just, you know, just hanging out. It's just funny, because we really don't think about things like that.
You
it's
just
like,
in
we
it.
Just
you
having
just,
fun.
You we just, honestly, to be honest, you just in there for them drinks and looking for them girls.
Right.
And that's pretty much what's going on.
Pretty much what was happening. You know, happy to see everybody kicking it live.
And the women are just on another level now.
Yeah.
So like, oh, man. And you actually know who they are. Yeah, man. Yeah, oh, man. Right. That's Tracy Ross. Right.
Yeah. They was doing Channel Zero. I'm in there hosting, you know what I'm saying? Interviewing people. Mm-hmm. And that was a good time, man.
So after that, I remember you guys then signed to
Band Apart.
So
that was Tarantino's.
Right.
And Lawrence Bender. We signed to the music video side. It was a good run with them.
So what did that relationship bring about?
That's where we actually really learned the business side of things, and probably like what made us want to start our own production company. You know, from us, we're coming from, like I said, you're coming from South Side of Chicago. I'm coming from Third Ward in New Orleans. Like, we're very, I mean, we still to this day, I think, hold on to a lot of the naiveness on purpose to keep us, just keeps you grounded. You know what I mean? But at that time, we didn't know, like, there was how the industry worked around and stuff. You know, we just assumed everything was just like how we did through the wire. You just put it together, you know what I'm saying? But then you had reps and all this stuff. It just opened up the whole world of, like, the access you had to these top-notch producers, you know, and there's other directors in there that were doing some dope stuff and working with, like, all types of alternative rock artists and stuff. So you're seeing, like, super creative. So you're obviously getting inspired by the other company that's kept around you with these other directors. And then we're in L.A. and saw the movie stuff. So it was an eye-opening experience and just let us feel like, man, we can accomplish way more bigger projects than we ever thought. You know?
Did you want to do a feature, like, right then and there?
We thought we was going to. Yeah. We thought when we was out there, we thought we was going to be. I mean, you know, you don't know that things take time and how much time actually goes into a feature and stuff. So as soon as we signed with, like, William Morris, we thought we were in. We were like, okay, we'll be at the Oscars next month. Big, you know what I'm saying?
Big shout out to Charles K, man. He believed in us from the get-go. But he was kind of probably like, because, like, we'd get a script, and if it wasn't good, we'd be like, we don't like it. You got another script. You know, most people would be, he'd be like, well, somebody is attached to this person. And we like, oh, but it's, you know. So we felt like, at first we felt like, they was testing us. You know, this is just a test. They don't want us to do this script because, you know, it was...
I mean, you would get, like, the stuff, like the Soul Planes and stuff. Like, that's just what they shot us. So most of the stuff you're getting are, like, these crazy, you know, action, comedy, you know, black films that just, you know, they aren't that great. You know what I mean? And we don't want to be pigeenholed or placed into that category. We know what
you didn't want to do a super artsy version of Soul Plane,
right?
That was our pitch.
So. This is a Chinese pilot.
We turned down a lot of movies, and the ones that we did go for, those are the only ones that got made. Yeah, Pride.
Ernie Banks film,
and Next Day Air. Yeah. You know, it's actually between us and Benny Boo for Next Day Air.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Our pitch was so crazy because we took Jackie Long into the pitch. Y'all know the actor Jackie Long?
Yeah, for sure.
And if you know Next Day Air, it's a scene where he had to go get the cocaine back. You know, he had UPS.
But so he was popping out, too. This was fresh off of ATL.
Right,
so he was like...
So we had him come in a meeting. We in there with the execs going through our thing. And we had one character blank.
Yeah.
Every all other characters we had, and that one character then, when they was like, so when we got on that one, we text him and he knocked on the door. They was like, who's interrupting this beat, dude? He came in like, hey, it did the whole scene.
Crazy.
For that, and we still didn't get it. But I thank God every time we get some or don't get it.
Who did Benny Boone bring in?
Yeah. I don't even know.
Yeah, he got it.
But you just realized quick out there the politics, you know what I'm saying? And like, we started seeing things, and I started to realize, you know, at that point, I think we realized, you know, it was what we did with Kanye was great with Through the Wire, but we realized we had to do some stuff to separate us from that, not in a negative way. It's just that we had to create our own name outside of Kanye,
because you can't just totally rely on
exactly him. We're in a lot of rooms because of that, because not so much because even though people still thought we were really creative and talented, but people want to get closer to Kanye, and you start realizing like managers or they're managing you because it's their end to getting closer to doing business with Kanye.
I mean, that's why we had you guys in the podcast.
That's
we
figured this was Kanye.
I mean, you know, and on our end too. Like, obviously, you milk it for what it is. But at the same time, there's a way. Okay, like that. Like, when we wind up doing Benji, these other documentaries. Now people talk about other things too, and that's dope because before it was just. We were just known for Through the Wire.
No, not before
like
Benji, though.
A very short Wikipedia entry.
Before Benji was mainly Through the Wire.
We had Mos Def, then we was Creative Control. Then it was Benji.
Yeah, Creative Control.
We've been over the Kanye tip since the third album when nobody talking about us at Kanye no more.
But can you guys talk about, like, and this still exists to this day, which is nuts because rap is pop culture, but, like, Hollywood doesn't get hip hop, right? Can you talk about like any meetings that you were in where like you said something and they were just like,
I mean, Hollywood just doesn't, to me, doesn't get a lot of things in a sense of like, it's just not real to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it has its own aesthetic and it likes to live in its own little bubble. I mean, you can look at the sitcoms that come out and the way they showcase life. It's a great reflection of how LA is. Mm-hmm. It's just different. You know what I'm saying? Until you get like a, you know, Boys in the Hood or some kind of Compton or some kind of realness of it. It lives in a whole nother bubble of reality. And so, which is different from New York, which I think thrives off of its being super real, super embracive of the realness and incorporating that within the art, where LA does exactly the opposite, where it kind of discards the reality and likes to focus on like the hyper reality and kind of gloss that up and package that up. That's why it's so refreshing when you get like a Kendrick Lamar who kind of still has his LA vibe but brings that realness that you're used to hearing on the East Coast. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
Yeah.
Hey guys, we just want to take a second to interrupt this podcast to tell you that we have a concert coming up in Los Angeles on November 2nd at the Bootleg Theater. Go get your tickets right now at itsthereal.com.
Give me a beat.
We got a show. It's here for you. It's Eric and Jeff and the It's the Real crew. We're going to rap and we're going to tell stories. We're going to be there. Bring your shorty.
Hip it. Hip it.
So, guys, it's more stuff just like that in a live setting. Come hang with us. Come laugh with us. Come get that VIP experience and hear our whole journey an hour ahead of the concert. Original music by It's The Real. All your favorites like Waco, Fire in a Crowded Room, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Jews for Jesus Peace, and maybe Jews for Jesus Peace Remix. Special guests. Lots of fun. Lots of podcast stuff. Lots of music stuff. Lots of experiences. Just for you guys out there in Los Angeles. If you're not going to be out there, spread the word. Tell your friends, family, strangers, whoever, that It's The Real is coming to town. Jeff, take us out.
A scoop of the wee bop, he bop, a scooby doo. Guess what? LA, we're coming for you.
Tickets at itsthereal.com right now. And now back to the podcast. Then you guys start Creative Control.
Yeah.
How did you come to the decision to do it yourselves?
Well, it came out of like, really, we were kind of, since we're still out in LA and we're getting the opportunity to do a commercial, and realizing quick, like, wow, it's completely different. The commercial world is completely different. But they were doing a commercial that was highly reflective of our culture, and we felt it real important that they nail this, especially if we're attached to it. So they had us do all this work that they, so we could basically almost like educate them on like, this is the way it should be done. You brought us in to really tell you how it should be done. And then they just totally went 360 from, you know what I mean? We're like, our names are attached. That's when we realized quick, like, man, in order to maintain the integrity of what you're doing, you have to have creative control. And the only way to have creative control, honestly, is not
to name your company.
Yeah, yeah. Creative control. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So we were surprised that the name even was out there. Like, damn, nobody has his name. Got the name. And it just became our mantras. Like, you know, whatever we do, we got to have control over it. 9 times of 10, you got to finance it. If you want to have control over it, you got to figure that angle out, you know. And yeah, it was a pivotal time, that particular commercial, that particular experience. And realizing, you know, we can't rely on anybody but ourselves to put out the what we want to do even on any level. And that's why we're writing screenplays now. It's like, it's nobody's obligation to give you anything. So you can't just go and cry about not, like, if you want to do it and you have a vision, yeah. you gotta figure it out and do 100%. It. 100%.
Yeah. What was your first office? Was it at DD172? Had Dame Dash set that up already?
Actually, yeah, that would have been our first office, because we was just in the cribs from them. But actually, yeah. We were working out of his crib on Lake Street when we started.
You were working out of Dame Dash's house?
Yeah. On
what?
His house was stupid, too. On Lake Street.
Yeah, how many Prokhead pairs did you
he had a closet. I heard he's selling his shoes on eBay now, but
we saw
but
that.
He had a closet he brought us into because he never wore a pair of shoes twice.
Yeah.
Man, it was, I've never seen so many suits, so many shoes. I mean, his clothes closet was at the time bigger than my apartment. Just for clothes alone. She was crazy. But we had some good times in there. And it was dope because it was a side of Dame. I mean, Dame was always cool with us coming up. You know, Cootie had met him first when he was just doing with Kanye. Then I got the privilege to meet him. And he always championed us from the Through the Wire stuff. And he told Cootie that, you know, he was going to help him out. Like, he gave him his word. And he stuck. Dame is one person that he's very loyal to his word when he says something. And, you know, we were shooting something. We were trying to put together something because he's always trying to figure out what can we do together. And we were trying to put together this project with Mos Def. They wound up doing a documentary.
Yeah,
we started the initial documentary with them.
Really?
With Mos. It's crazy. You got this footage is crazy. I mean, their doc was dope that they wanted to do one, but we had a whole other angle, and it was pretty dope.
What was your angle?
It was just because it was Mos was like the caveat. Like Mos was the host of the whole thing. So he was navigating this world and asking him questions. And then, you know, Mos brings his whole vibe. I mean, we wound up getting his limousine, like this crazy old limousine riding through. Oh, yeah, because you didn't go riding through Vermont and Mos got on top of the limousine. Like it was just crazy. It was on some whole other, like take them, but just add, you know, Mos to the element. It changes everything. And he had so much respect for them. So it was like Mos trying to navigate this world anew because he was a fan. Mos was a fan of them. You know what I mean? They did a whole concert together. It was crazy. But
where was the concert?
In Vermont. There was Mos Def. Mos wound up doing this concert in Vermont. And that's why we went out there, because they lived in Vermont. It was the craziest experience ever, because Vermont, there was probably like, again, there was only like Caduce and you.
Like the blackest thing was the limousine that you guys took.
L.E.P. Bogus Boys.
Cootie shot that one down, man. Shot that was retarded.
So I would go down and shoot, me and Kenny Koo, we just have a camera. And then I come back with the footage and Chica edited it up.
Yeah.
That's how we were doing
it. Yeah.
But he would get stuff that was like, so, I mean, he didn't have no money. So he was getting stuff, though, but he's in a bank. Somehow he found this bank that was like abandoned. And when they were about to close it down or tear it down, and they got able to shoot in it. And so you get this whole, like, the scene when the people are coming in. It looks like a scene from a film. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was crazy.
I got who managed LEP at the time. He just was plugged, you know, so it was a bank. They was about to make it a Rite Aid.
Yeah.
And we went in there and shot it. It was like, man, y'all got 4 hours to shoot because we remodeling it. So we went in there in 4 hours. We made all that happen. I was like, okay, everybody sit there.
Those are my 4 hours. Some of my favorite work is the work when we do it like that. We don't do it that often, but some of my favorite work is when Cootie just goes and does his thing and comes back with like a barrel of footage and doesn't tell me anything. And I just go through the footage because through the footage I can see what he's thinking.
Totally.
Just because we always had this kind of like, you know, finish the other person. So I know what it is. And I can see the story that he's trying to put together. And it's fun. It's like a puzzle. It's like, okay, oh yeah, he's trying to tell me to do this. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. Yeah. That's also the hardest Top Chef challenge. That's great. Back to working out of Dame's house. Yeah. Did you guys show up at like a regular time every day? Or
it was like, you know, obviously Dame is a mogul. Like Dame is one person that at one point I wanted to be on that show, The Hustler, because you know what I mean.
It would have been unfair.
I know, definitely. But he didn't know me like that. You know what I'm saying? But
what's
he knew
your name?
Me. Yeah, right, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. But we were in this particular situation. We were partners, so it wasn't like we were under Dame or nothing. We were both like in this together, and this is Dame like. This is way more humble Dame. He's been, you know, there's a lot of things have transpired now, and he's seen the world in kind of a new light. So it's a different Dame, you know what I mean? But, and he had this passion. It was a crazy type of passion that he had to get this thing off the ground with us. So we were all just burning to midnight. Like, everybody's putting in work. Like, Dame's up, getting no sleep, trying to figure this whole thing out. We're all just excited up. These new 5Ds come out. Like, they're fresh out.
Yeah.
Nobody's seen. Like, we had kind of been familiar with it because we had been shooting with this cat Woods in L.A. who had showed us, I think it was like a 70. It was like 70 or some camera put one out, whatever.
It was the Sony one.
The Sony one. Yeah. And we were like, this is crazy.
You can switch lenses.
Right. So it's looking like a camera. We can be shooting. You know what I'm saying?
Look, I prayed to God. I said, God, I said, if we get one of these cameras, I'm gonna shoot so much. I'm gonna shoot everything if you let me get. And when I did, we wind up, because we got the camera, I was shooting so much that the Canon wound up giving us four more cameras. Dame,
so shout out to Canon.
We bought a camera, so Dame went and bought the first camera. Like, that's the one thing about him, man. Like, shit would just happen at a whole nother speed. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, you want it? Let's go. Let's get it. You know what I mean? Because he was investing in the vision. And then next thing you know it, that one camera turned into, like, 6 cameras from Canon. We wound up going to Canon, getting these cameras. But that experience went from his house to, like, he went and found, because he had other companies prior. And this building in Tribeca, there was a building there that he had done some, he was working on some car stuff before, and the building was black. It was nobody. It was so he knew the owner, and he's like, man, you know, he negotiated with the owner to get us in that building. I guess some free rent, like until we started clicking, whatever. Whatever he did, we wound up in that building. The building was crazy, and we had it all to ourselves. It was like you couldn't. It was the craziest situation. Yeah. Next, so we got a building, our own building, not an office space, right. The whole building, and then we just started executing, and so much came. Like so much came out of that. I tell folks all the time, like, I don't know what it was like when, like, Andy Warhol and Basquiat was collaborating at the factory, but I can believe this is probably the closest thing to that. You know what I'm saying?
That was actually DD 172, right? Yeah, we went there. They had parties you know, like
which I hated that he called it DD 172 even still to this day.
CC 172.
We went to a Bun B, like listening down there.
Currency would hang out, obviously.
I do want to take a moment to shout out our friend Justin Fleischer.
Yeah,
Fleisch is running around the world now with Logic and doing everything. But he definitely said that you guys
read a lot of cats. I mean, it was like school. It was like, you know, it was school, not even from us, like, mentoring, you know, up-and-coming filmmakers, but also business from hearing stuff from Dame, and Dame was one of the craziest, like, motivational speakers you could ever hear, so even hearing him talk about just, you know, living old memories and hearing certain things, but then just you hear this, like, renegade spirit, you know, in him talking about just the world and this and that, and everybody bought into this thing, and some for the good and some for the bad, you know what I mean? But it was definitely a time that was very special. That could have really rechanged the whole music industry with it, but it just never maximized its full potential. You know what I mean?
Why did it stop?
I just think it's a lot of different egos and just dealing with a lot of different, you know, things being really gray when it comes to certain issues and not everybody buying into certain things and just really overall grayness. And only because everybody's still just trying to figure out what, like, we know we have something, but what is it? You know what I'm saying?
We're just having so much fun.
But how do you monetize it? Or this and that, like, trying to get brands in. But now everybody's doing what we were doing. And now brands all of a sudden get it now, and but at money the time covered it was hard. It
like, oh, wait a minute. You know, money's the root of all the evil.
Well, it's either fighting over money or girls. So
it was a combination of all that. It was a combination of all that.
By the way, it's super tough to be ahead of the curve.
And you're dealing with a lot of alphas, you know what I'm saying? When you're having a room with a bunch of different alphas and nobody's really going, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Listen, Arts Camp doesn't last forever.
Right.
This was your second one, so.
Right.
How did the Erykah Badu video come about?
Without, you know, that. Well, because of DD172, Erykah would come by there. Jay Electronica.
Did you look her in the eye?
Yeah, I tried. I did.
No. She's catching everybody.
She did everyone. But she would come through there, and then Jay. I remember we went to a listening party. It was funny because we had to listen it for her album, and you know I got the camera, so I'm hitting. Filming some things
as I do.
And then afterwards she was like, I seen you bootlegging my album. I was like, huh? Like, wait a minute. She's like, yeah, I seen you bootlegging. I said no. And I knew, it's like, I knew what shot to show her. So I went to this shot of her shoe.
Yeah,
just her. She was sitting on this bench and her shoes, and I just got this ill shot of her shoe. So I showed her that. I said, look, this is what I was filming. And that might have helped us, though, because she was probably like, oh, wait, this man shot my shoe.
Right.
It looked like this. But Jay, when she wanted to do the video, Jay Electronica was like, man, you should use Cootie and Chike for the video. And sure enough, we got the call, and man, it was one of them calls like, whoa, what you want to do? Oh, yeah, man. You know, we couldn't write a treatment for that. Like, yeah, Erykah Badu, we want you to take your clothes off in public. And then, but she was inspired by Madden Kim.
Which is crazy in itself, because Jay is from around the corner from me, so we both went to the same barbershop, but we never knew each other until New York. So we, so many times we're like, damn, we've probably crossed paths, or just you went to the barbershop and I just left, because he was I'm between the Magnolia and the Calio, but he's in the Magnolia. So we always talk about it, like, because we both were kind of like anomalies from these neighborhoods that actually was able to migrate up here, because a lot of people just weren't fortunate enough to really make it out those circumstances at that time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. If you only had a camera crew following you around, you could just look through the tapes and find that. And, yeah. But so shooting that video, did you guys have a lot of time? Did you have a little time? What was it?
I mean, we had How long was the song? Four minutes.
Yeah.
But like in slow mo.
No, I know. But did you plan it out? Did you do any rehearsals with clothes on?
We did rehearsals in her house, which we actually have a video of that, and that's a dope one because her house is so dope and how it's laid out, and she had like this manga animation playing. I can't remember which one it was. So like you, and she's got like these Ali boxes. Like it's a lot of stuff going on. So that was dope. But then we actually went to the night before. We went to the location, the grassy knoll, and actually tried to just mock like so we could get the timing right and do the walk. You know what I mean? Which is crazy because we had brought a DP down and everything, Woods, and Cootie winded up shooting it. So we didn't even need to bring the DP. But it was one of ones where it's like, who's gonna shoot it? It's like you know Jordan takes the last shot. So it was Jordan had to shoot it. You know what I mean?
Looking, thank you.
And, take that. Because I shot the rehearsal.
Yeah.
But I can't front. Like I was not ready to shoot. I was not ready to have that on me.
Yeah.
Like I'm not about to be the one to have that on me. You know what I'm saying?
But this really was like. You know, when an NFL team goes to like the hotel and they're in like the conference room and they're like, you know, mimicking the plays and running through it, like, but you're in a conference room. That's what you guys were doing ahead of what you were actually going to do in real life.
Yeah. Exactly. What we knew to give the ball to Marshawn.
Right. The reason why we did the rehearsal too was because she was going to sing the song and we knew we was going to shoot slow motion. So we wanted her to rehearse singing the song, you know, sped up.
Yeah.
And that's why we did it. But, you know, she's such a genius in her right that she didn't sing it. She just got out the car and just did the walk. And that was
I just want to get this straight. On the grassy knoll, there was only one shooter?
Actually, it was two shooters. Oh. Because Wood was right there with the camera just in case.
You're right.
Imagine the one camera didn't work. Like, that would have just been such a bummer. But in terms of fear that you guys would get, like locked up, where was that, like, 1 to 10?
On a scale of, like, 1, 2, I'm getting locked up. Like, where...
Never crossed time. It's one of the retrospective things we were talking about the other day where it's like, man, you look back on things and think, dang, this could have happened. Like, I remember I tell my story to my mother all the time. I was in a swamp as a kid fishing, and this alligator caught a line and dragged it across the water. And as a kid, not thinking, I go to try to get my hand in the water, not thinking that an alligator could actually grab me. And you don't think about that till later. So in this, we never thought once about, oh man, we could actually get locked up. You just didn't think about that until then. You heard it afterwards. Everybody was talking about, people was looking for, you know. And then like, oh damn, yeah, we might have been able to, we probably could have got arrested for it.
Yeah.
I don't think what we did was that.
Her mother did say before we got in the car to go, because I was filming like behind the scenes, like her getting the makeup done, with her kids, everything. We get in the car and her mother came over and was like, hey, when y'all get arrested, don't drop the soap.
I never thought about that. Yeah. To tell you the truth, like, I would have been surprised. If they did, you would have seen my face like, what? Why did you do that? Because you just got so caught up in the excitement of the moment and just caught up working with Erica because we looked her in the eyes.
When they sent her with the $500 bill, like they charged her like $500 for getting naked in public. Did you guys contribute to that since it was your fault for not getting a permit?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, she got all the money. They will take care of that.
Do you like how quickly we brushed past the fact that you almost got your arm bitten off by
an alligator?
My God.
Yeah, I mean, in the swamps and you would grow up in New Orleans and stuff, that stuff was just like we were literally in the swamps with nets catching little baby alligators just for fun, and then you throw them back in the water. Like, we had a whole, you know, you knew the whole routine. When you're coming back at night, you just flash the light in the alligator's eyes and it freezes them. So that's how you can navigate back without having to worry about it.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
I did something real quick similar to Chike. I rolled the window down and asked this guy where the party was at in Chicago in the Huntage, right? And he said, oh, the party over there around the corner. Then he said, all well, almighty. That's like a gang, what people say. And the guys I was in the car with, they were moles. They call them moles. So they were like, all well, almighty. And my window down, and he said, ain't no almighty here. He said, GD, pulled a gun out, put it to my head, and clicked it off, and then go off. And then we sped off down the street. So, you know, we all make them mistakes.
You're here because you know you're supposed to be here. You do so many dumb things growing up. Like, on his point, mine was not nearly as crazy as that, as far as like the fear of a gun being pointed in my head. But I remember being on the highway, and we used to take these trips to like Pensacola to go run these races and stuff. And we'd be on the highway, my mother, and I don't know why, as a kid, I don't know if anybody else has this, I might just be weird, but I always had a fixation with wanting to open the door while we were on the highway. And so one time I was just like, fuck it.
With your mother?
I'm in the back seat. And I open, because I want to just open and close it real quick just to see. And I did. And you know, she's going like 80, 90 miles an hour. She heard the thing. I closed it. And she was like, what? Did she freak out? I'm like, I just wanted to see. She's like, you know, I'm not realizing that the door could just fly open because of the.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Physics out. And I'm out.
Yeah, yeah.
Not thinking none of that. You know, I probably, luckily, I was probably. Just didn't open it like that one centimeter.
Second, right? Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But note to like self: never sit next to Chike on a flight.
Yeah,
the emergency door.
Too, actually.
I ran with scissors once. Yeah, I feel like we all have crazy things to reveal. Right.
Oh my god! So, all right, how does ESPN approach you guys to do a 30 for 30? Was Bill Simmons still there at the time?
Yeah, Bill was there, but he didn't approach us. You could tell that story.
Yeah, so the girl that I was dating at the time, she was working for Keith Klingscale, who actually was running the whole 30 for 30. I believe he was, that was his concept, if I'm not mistaken. But he wanted to meet with us. He had inquired to her about meeting with us. She had told him about creative control, and he had heard about it. He wanted to meet with us about creative control, not necessarily about a 30 for 30, but just in general about what we were doing with the network and whatnot. And then obviously, you know, we know we've been trying to make this Benji film. We were trying to make it a movie first for like 7 years. We were out in LA trying to make that into a film, and that didn't work out. They wanted us to cast like, did they want to cast like a white player to play Benji? Or something?
Yeah,
it was
before,
crazy.
Yeah,
before,
yeah.
Yeah. So
what do you think when they say that?
Like, I think Hollywood. That what I was telling you about earlier. Yeah. Where it's like they just don't keep it real. It's like making it into something. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Just speaking honestly, I think Topher Grace would be a really good Benji.
FYI.
Yeah. Right.
But so then we get the meeting and we wind up telling them about. You know, about the documentary and what our take with it. And I think Cootie stole him just because of the intimate relationships he's had with everybody in Chicago and the way he wanted to tell this story. And then we had the, like, you know, my girl at the time was working there, so she had the decks for all the older 30 for 30s, so she got one of the decks and we just patented our deck. Yeah, so yeah. It all, you know, like, again though, just God putting these things together.
And my sister, too. My sister.
She got
all
telling me that was
so
crazy.
She worked at NBC. So she, like, when we were trying to make the movie happen, she gave us a bunch of that news footage that y'all seen on the show. Even though we, like, later on when we did ESPN, we actually licensed that footage from them.
Sure.
You know, but she gave it to us prior just to make a trailer. And that really helped us get it as well, because they seen a trailer. We had everything right there. Like, boom, here. And it worked.
How much time did you guys spend in Chicago putting it together?
Well, the doc, man, months, like maybe 3 months all together.
Yeah, about
3 months.
Did you find that everybody was open and available to you guys?
Yeah, like I say, Benji Spirit was with us the whole time with everybody. It was almost like and I knew mostly everybody that was in the film.
Yeah.
But some, like, if I didn't know them personally, I knew they best friend. You know what I mean? But so... You know, and like I say, Benji Spirit was there because, like, his best friend Mario became, like, our best friend. He was the best friend of the film. So he'd take us places everywhere. You know, he'd come with us to the shoots, and he was introducing us to more people. And, you know, so he had a lot to do with the success of the film. But, of course, Billy Moore, he wasn't cool with Billy, of course. You know what I mean? Because Billy Moore is the one who killed Benji.
Yeah, yeah.
But the guy Mike who said a long time ago, he was like, man, they doing these 30 for 30s. Y'all should do one on Benji. He told me that before we even had the meeting and all of that.
Crazy.
And but it all happened right in the same vicinity of that meeting happening. It was crazy. But that guy, he cut hair, Mike, and he in the documentary as well, but he cut hair, and somebody was that knew Billy, like Billy Cousin or somebody, was in a shop. And he was like, and they was talking about it, and she was like, I'll tell him. Next thing I know, Billy Moore calls Mike. Now, remember, Mike and Benji was cool.
Right.
Billy Moore calls Mike. We all out. We together. Billy Moore called. He yo, this Billy. And I was like, what? So I get on the phone with Billy, and I'm like, And I just told Billy, like, dude, I could have been you. We had guns, you know what I'm saying, coming up. Luckily, I didn't shoot nobody. Or I had guns pointed at me. Luckily, I didn't get killed. So I'm like, I am you. You need to tell, you know, and we just, we had a meeting with him, with Billy at this restaurant. He came with his guy, and he just was like, man, you know what? I'm happy that y'all want to tell my side of the story. Let, you know, let's make it happen. And that was a blessing. Yeah, me and Billy cool to this day.
What was the reaction like when you guys first gave a cut to ESPN? And then what was the reaction after it aired?
ESPN was dope because that platform, they're all about, like, letting the directors express themselves creatively. So their notes were, like, they actually just gave really good notes. You, a lot of times when you do things with, like, companies and stuff, they're just people that just feel like they have to say something, so they'll just say whatever just yep. because their voice needs to be said, probably yep. gets the hold of it. They're not like that over there. Like, everything was, like, all about making the story better, as good as possible. So they all, you know, John, I got to shout them out, John Dahl and Connor and Libby, like, you know what I'm saying? And even, like I said, my ex who put us in that situation, Jamie Sanchez, because she shouted me out in this podcast that she just did. But she's a dope producer at Vice now, doing That's her awesome. Thing. But they all cared about the project being really well. And we were impressed when they gave us our notes. We're like, damn, these are, like, really yeah, dope. So they, yeah, like, yeah. they weren't, like a lot simple. Of times you're like, huh? And yeah, and simple. Like, we had put together, I think we had put together, our idea came together pretty solid. And like you said, we got things that we would, like, yeah. in our initial treatment, we never thought we were going to get.
Even though they was on there, of course.
Billy Moore, though. Yeah, and did we have Billy in there?
We had both of them on there because we was going would have went to the jail.
Right. But our yeah, arc wasn't like it right, wasn't like wasn't we're like, gonna right. take you here and then bam hit you with this and yeah, then like yeah, that yeah. just yeah. made because Derek we were hinging upon Derrick Rose like that was like our big yeah. arc was to yeah, have yeah, Derrick sure, Rose yeah. come Ooh. In and be
yeah,
like,
yeah.
you know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
So. And Nick Anderson and that was one of the notes they were like, man, y'all got to get Nick Anderson, mm-hmm. y'all got to get Jesse Jackson, y'all got to get this person. We had like just straight fat. It was really good what we put together, but they needed.
They went and shot Sonny for us, like Sonny.
Yeah,
and it Sonny was crazy because Sonny hit me the other day out the blue. You know what I'm saying? I was like, you know what I'm saying? But he's working on something. And he wanted to get our blessing because I think he's going to incorporate Benji's name in there. I mean, That's I'm awesome. Like, you don't even need, but whatever. It was yeah. dope. Just, you know, he got such a distinctive voice. It was crazy.
And when it aired, who reached out to you guys and were just like, this is amazing? And
well, we premiered at Tribeca Film Festival, so we was like the so Robert Gala De Niro films. Came up.
Yeah,
Robert De Niro, exactly.
Yeah, Robert was dope. I remember shooting on the red carpet, and he was telling me something about how to keep the perfect smile for when you're like the way you keep your teeth together while you're taking the pictures. I was dying. I'm like, you've done this a million times. I don't know. I'm gonna listen to what you say. You know
what I mean? Yeah, the reception from that was really, really good. You know, people were. Of course, crying. You know what I'm saying? So we hit all the emotions that we was trying.
And it was
to
one of
them,
once again, like we knew. Yeah. We couldn't wait to show it because we know what it's going to make you feel. Because we had to watch watching the thing 100 times. You know what I'm saying? So we know what we're feeling.
Yeah.
And we feel like if we're feeling it, then you're going to feel the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So.
And so, okay, you've done epic music videos. You've put together this documentary for a really wonderful series, 30 for 30, on national television that had a premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival. Mm-hmm. At that point, are you guys like, okay, now is the right time to get into scripted stuff and let's transition into that full time?
Well, you know, we always wanted to get into scripted stuff before that. They just weren't letting us in.
Right.
You know what
right,
I'm saying? Right. And
cast Topher Grace and they'll make it happen.
Exactly. right. Like, yeah. But now we realize, okay, we at least have a better shot now. We have something to say. You can't tell us we can't do long form anymore. We know that much. So there'll probably be another excuse that they'll figure out. But, you know, that's why we're writing our own stuff now, so that there can be no, like I said before, you can't leave it up to anybody to even have an excuse. If you do it yourself, then it doesn't matter what anybody, you know, you just do it. So, we now started figuring out, like, well, and we found a sweet spot. Like, everybody now wants us to do sports docs. You know what I mean? Which is crazy because, like, I grew up playing basketball, didn't make it, but kind of am still around basketball, around NBA athletes and stuff like that. It's crazy, but just from a different angle. So yeah, you know, we are in this little pocket now, documentaries, and you know, we'll ride this wave as long as we can ride it. Maybe we'll be like the Ken Burns of the black people, and then but we definitely aggressively going for full length narrative films next.
And how can you take the lessons that you learned with what the initial idea for Creative Control was and use that for longer form stuff?
Writing our own stuff, yeah. Like, you know, there's some things that come across that other people write that we're really interested in too. There's other things that we're working on now that other writers have written that, you know, but for the most part, just building up Creative Control, the production company, building that into something that where we can afford to not just finance our own projects, but also other up and coming directors, giving them an opportunity so that they don't have to go through the things that, like, unlike the studios did, like when we become a studio, we will give people that. I don't need to know that you didn't do this or that first. If I believe in you, I believe in you, and I'm gonna give you the opportunity. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And you don't need giant corporations anymore. Right. Like, we do live in an age now where it's just like, you guys had that spirit all along. Mm-hmm. Now it's just like the world is caught up with you once again. So it's just like, if you want to do something, go and do it and like make it happen.
Yeah. Do it independent. You know, I don't know if I'm going too fast, but that's what the next project that we did. We did it independent. We doing a story about the first African American to play in the NBA, Earl Lloyd. People don't know that story. And when Coach Poor and my guy Donnie Kersky hit us about it, that was the first question. Who the first person to play, black person to play in the NBA? I'm like,
Shaquille O'Neal. Yeah.
Right. Bill Russell, is it? Elgin Baylor. No, you don't know. You know, I didn't know. And it was like Earl Lloyd, and he's still alive. So we was like, yo, we got to tell this story. We got to get up with Earl. We got to do all of that. And we got to do it independent. We like all these NBA players, you know, because of him, you know, it's them. Because of this man, they have the opportunity to make the money that they make, and maybe they're investing. Mike Finley came on board, and Tony Parker, Carmelo, Kawhi Leonard, Chris Paul came on board.
NBA Players Association.
Yeah, NBA Players Association, which was a big part of Michelle Roberts and Chris Achen was a big part of putting all this together, and we made it happen, and we premiering Hampton's Film Festival October 6th.
Crazy.
So, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, but Earl, it was funny because it just took so long when you're doing that. You know what I mean? So doing something independent you got to raise the money. You got to do everything.
We shot a whole documentary in between that whole process. We shot a documentary on Muhammad Ali.
And won an
last
award.
Documentary while he was alive, we won an NAACP Image Award for that. That was dope, though, to know that he saw it, to know that his family appreciated it. You know what I mean?
So, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
So now next you guys go out to the Hamptons Film Festival.
Yeah,
and I can't believe you guys just did a movie just to go out to the Hamptons. It's a very easier way to get out there.
That's what we're going to do for Sundance and everything.
Yeah.
I ain't been to Sundance, but we're going to do a movie so we can go to Sundance and Cannes and all of them.
So now you see a lot of directors who were in the generation before you guys doing music videos again, right? Like a lot of these guys who shot big budget stuff, then obviously everything sort of like in the music industry shifted, and you was like, let's do more smaller budget stuff. But now you find a lot of these guys, Dave Myers, Hype Williams, I guess Director X has still been doing it the entire time, but like a lot of guys from
Benny Boom,
a lot of guys come back to the art. Are you guys inspired by where everything is music wise? Are you interested in doing music videos? Where do you sit in 2017 with music video direction?
I think that's a tough question.
He a little different probably than me.
I don't like it, but because I just hate to be negative and be about things, but I feel like the music video industry is one place where I kind of have like a bitterness that still exists in me, and it's only because I felt like Cootie, unlike me, was super passionate about music videos, and I felt like we had so much change to bring into the game, and I felt like we proved it when we did Through the Wire, and I felt like it was like when you love something so much but it doesn't really love you back, like that's what I feel about the whole business of music videos. Like we wrote so many treatments, like over hundreds and hundreds of treatments, and never really, like none of them, maybe one got actually turned into a video. Other than that, everything was just other than that, it was just like relationships, you know what I'm saying? And so I felt like I just felt let down by the, not that it ever owed me anything, but I felt like the change that I was looking to make in music, in hip hop specifically, that it didn't allow, really allow us to make it at the level that I wanted to make it at.
And well,
I
to sort that of that like was a shame. Give like people a picture of what you're talking about. Like, what's a concept that you were super passionate about?
Did you just tell them the story of Rail? Because that's how we moved to L.A. and got with Will Morris and all that. Because we were supposed to do that Rail video that we were so excited about.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that got me more is, like, I see the video now that Mark Romanek did for O.J. Mm-hmm. So, not saying that video was anything like that from a concept point of view, but from an aesthetic point of view, that was exactly what our video was taking that animation style, not the sort of... animation style that had to deal with depicting black folks. So it wasn't that, but it was just an older school style similar to that. And our video was going to be sort of a mashup of that style with shot footage. I mean, the video concept was really dope, very creative for an artist like Rel or Consequence, you know what I mean? And just for, you would have never seen anything like this within the R&B space.
Yeah.
And I think it was a chance that they all, like, I think Relvert really needed it for his career to just revitalize it. Consequence was in a good space to help that revitalization. And just because of egos, it didn't happen. It didn't. It's not that it wasn't good. It just, for people, sabotaged it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Dame even was giving us more money to make it happen with the animation. He's seen it. But with the artists, it just didn't work out. And we needed that. We was expecting that, buddy. We was at the MTV Music Awards in Miami. Yeah. Left from there, went to L.A. and wound up not leaving L.A. That's when the Will Morris thing happened. We got an apartment like that because of Will Morris. It was crazy. And we wound up staying in L.A. But that was one of them videos that was like, we depended on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's like in a game where it's like hip hop, to me, like the whole thing about hip hop was so dope growing up, you know, in the late 80s, in the early 90s, you know, it being this expression. It was, people were so different. You know what I mean? You've seen all these dope videos that from Tribe Called Quest and, you know, Can I Kick It and all these ill videos from back in the day. And when we come in this era of like the late 2000s, when you, and everything just changed, and there's no self identity, and everybody's trying to be, and everybody just wants to repeat what they saw last, and it's all just about, like, you know, defamation of these female characters. Like, it's just like, what are we doing? You know what I'm saying? But this represents us as a people to the world, and then we're worrying about when we go to like another country and people look at us crazy or don't trust us or clutch, like, because we're putting this imagery out on ourselves for people to think that's the, some people, they who haven't even actually had any type of interaction with a black person, this is how they perceive us based off of this body of work that we're putting out. And I'm not saying that you don't have to put, everything needs to be conscious at all, but I'm saying not everything needs to be this way. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Just so we're not going to get the Kuti and Chike video of anonymous women dancing by the pool.
I'm not sitting here saying I'm not going to watch that video either. No, I will watch that video. Yeah. I just won't make that video.
Right.
Now that I got a daughter, it's really like, I'm like, I look at them videos like, why? Yeah. So my daughter looking up to this, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you successful, got money, but got a G-string on in your video. Why? Like, for what reason?
Yeah. Man? Now you guys are able to, like, really change and push culture through longer form things.
Yeah.
Do you find that in a YouTube age that your audience wants to watch longer form stuff and is with you throughout that hour and a half?
Yeah, I don't think movies are going to go anywhere. I mean, that's just my feeling. I feel like there's something about people always like to see movies. You know what I'm saying? I think there's just something very special about stories that, and the way people can, the way they can impact you when you sit in a theater. And there's something, an experience about going to the movies, period. It's not even so much about the movies. It's a whole experience. It's the smell of the popcorn. It's this communal watching with, like, you know, 50 or 100 other people. There's something to that experience that I don't think, well, same reason why we go to concerts, is this communal aspect of sharing this one moment together with all these people.
Totally. You know what I mean? And we talk about this a lot. Like, that's one thing that people can't get for free.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you can't illegally download that.
Right.
You have to,
go
be there and experience it and laugh or cry next to someone else who's doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, next up, after this? What do you guys have in the works? What's in the can? Like, what's going on?
Or are you guys just resting on your laurels and you're just like,
we did it.
Yeah, we retired.
I mean, one of the projects that we're looking forward to is the Ernie Barnes documentary, which is, if you ever watch Good Times, the J.J. Payne's on Good Times, that's Ernie Barnes.
And so correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe when we were out at the Grammys, didn't Kanye get an Ernie Barnes painting for his ceiling or whatever?
That's how that all kind of came about with Marcus Gradney.
Marcus.
Yeah. He facilitated all of that. Cootie's got that story.
Right. Like, we was in the studio, Kanye working on College Dropout, and they had a Christmas party, and Marcus family, they big in music, so I guess they were all there. I don't know, but I just met Marcus at the time, and he was wondering, like, who these? In other words, it was only me, Kanye, Deuce, and Sway in the studio.
And Ananda Lewis, right? So he
man, what y'all doing here? What's going on? We riding around on these scooters they had at Record Plant. And I'm like, man, I said, come in here, hear this music. So he came in, and of course, Kanye played the music and rapped the music with it. That's what Kanye did. He rapped the music and played it for everybody all the time. That was his passion. But so Marcus was like, man, my uncle, my uncle Ernie Barnes. And I was like, Ernie Barnes, the painter?
Yeah.
And he was like, you know Ernie Barnes? I usually have to say Good Time for people to know Ernie Barnes' name. I'm like, no, I know art. I know a little bit about art. And I was like, I always been a fan of Ernie Barnes. Even when I didn't know his name, I was just like, I need to have those J.J. Paintings on my wall when I get rich or whatever.
Yeah.
And long story short, Marcus came to the hotel that week with two signed Ernie Barnes books. Gave him one to me and one to Kanye. And then I was like, Kanye, you should get Ernie Barnes to do your album cover like Marvin Gaye did. That'd be crazy, right? So we talking about that, and he was like, man, he talking to G about it and everything. And that's how pretty much the painting started. But Mark, while we was in that, Jay Ivy was going through the book, and he looked. He was like, wait a minute, Ernie Barnes a football player? He was like, hold on. He like, wait a minute. And at the same time, the same day, G Robinson come through the door with an Ernie Barnes throwback jersey on. You know what I'm saying?
Yo.
Ernie Barnes, he was like, I didn't even know who jersey this was. We was like, whoa. So all that was meant.
Yo.
And then me, Kanye, and his mom went and met with Mr. Barnes. He was like down, and he would come to the studio with sketches. And I'm filming all of this. I ain't filmed the meeting with his mom, with us, his mom and Ernie Barnes. But he'd come to the studio. I'll film with the sketches, and I'll film them. Like painting, and he would be like, Cootie Chica, y'all come meet me for breakfast. We'd go to breakfast, hear all these stories about how the Sugar Shack, him and Marvin Gaye was playing basketball, and he was like, look at this painting. Marvin was like, let me show this to Barry. And dude, them stories are so crazy. So after a while, he was like, out of nowhere, even though like everybody was turning us down to do movies, he was like, man, I want y'all to do my movie. So we was going to meetings.
Yeah, now we brought to do his anonymous movie. Anonymous content.
Right.
We had a manager
with Ernie Barnes. And people were like, wait a minute. So, of course, Hollywood. We need to get rid of those guys and just take Ernie. And so they trying to go behind us to get Ernie. And Ernie was like, nope. He was like, man, I'm not doing it right now. What I'm going to do, I'm going to write a book. And after I finish the book, we're going to write the script off the book and go from there. But then he got sick.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's something we're excited about, though.
That's amazing. I remember during Grammy week, the presentation of it, which was at CAA.
You got all that footage.
Yeah, same here. Because
the
people at CAA were like, there was some painting that was hanging up. They're like, you can't like tape that. So I went through something like you, where I had to like take the mini DV tape out of my Canon XL2 camera, right? And switch it up real quick and give them the blank tape and be like, okay, we're good, and hold on to the other footage. So. But Ernie Barnes, Marcus, man, there were so many people that week. I know you guys were like, oh, yeah, like this was like, just trying to holler at girls, whatever. But like for me, it was like a weird dream that I had, where it was just like, all these celebrities together in one place. It was like Larry King's here, and
the CAA was actually way more like. I was way more in awe there than I was at, like, the Grammy party.
Yeah.
Because the Grammy party was, like, our contemporary.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the
yeah,
CAA
yeah.
was, like, Diana Ross. Like, yeah. it was, like dang. Yeah. That was one when I was definitely, yeah. like, this room is crazy.
Well, did you holler at Diana Ross?
Yeah, I might have winked at her, too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. See, what's so crazy? That's still big, I guess, because I'd be so into capturing yeah. the moment.
Yeah.
That it was... tripped out, but it wasn't, you know what I mean? It was,
you're still
it was
like,
I'm just filming
the lens,
Diana,
yeah.
right, I'm
yeah,
doing
yeah.
the lens, and, you know, I just wasn't like, oh, damn, that's Diana, or this is that person, you know, I was just
not
like,
at all? Like,
yeah, right.
Trying to get that out.
Yeah. No. Let's finish with this. There was a video that came out a few months ago that got the whole internet excited, which was you and Kanye linking up on yeah. outside of some club in LA.
Yeah.
That meant a lot to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Meant a lot to us. Meant a lot to everyone who tunes in on Fake Short Drive. It meant a mm-hmm. lot to Twitter at large.
Hopefully, mm-hmm. it meant something to you.
Yeah, what did it mean?
You know, I'm still like,
just looking at that great
yeah.
girl over there.
I'll see you inside.
I couldn't wait to get in the party. I'm like, what we doing out here? Let's go in the party. No, that was great. I mean, you know, it was like, you know, because when he went through what he went through, I was like real concerned. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm talking about why I'm watching a rant. How we would watch a rant, you know, and be like, oh, Kanye just crazy. No, I'd like stop and pray in the middle. Like, oh, I'm like, oh my God. And then come to find out, you had to go to the high. I'm like, oh, I seen it. Like, I felt yeah. everything. So I kept like hitting everybody, like, dude, please put me in touch with Kanye. I need to be with him. I need to talk to him. So I would call everybody. Nobody would get me in touch. And thank God that Kanye reached out to old school wise Gree.
Yeah.
During this time, it was like, Gree, I need you. And me, you know, back in the day, it would be in the pivotal time of his career, it would be me, Ice Gree, and Kanye. Just I'm filming Ice Gree, helping him do everything else. For, you know, we all lived in a W, you know what I'm saying, for months.
Yeah.
So just that dynamic. And then, you know, then Ice Gree, like, yeah, I told him about you, you know, and he getting right, so we happy. And then I went down there to the BET Awards, and I was just like, I'm on God's flow. I'm going to just go. I'm going to just let God do everything. But I'm just, wherever he pushed me, wherever he guided me to, whatever, I'm going to just let him do it. And I was just doing that. And then on our way to the awards, I told Ice Cream, I said, because I know Kanye too. So I said, dude, invite Kanye with us. You know what I'm saying? He just left from Kanye. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, invite him. Just say, Cootie said, come with us to the BET Awards. I know you're going to say no, but just do it. Because yeah. it's something that you should do. Why not? So he did it. He was like, man, you should come. And Kanye was like, well, you know, I ain't trying to do events right now, but y'all should meet me afterwards. And that's how that all happened. Yeah. yeah. Wow. And it was a blessing. And, you know, we reconnected. And, you know, so it's going to be good. It's like, it's like the full circle of everything that we've been working on from in the 90s, 98. You know what I mean? Which
yeah.
would probably be the 20th anniversary, I'm thinking. I'm going to call him and say that. Yo, you know we got our 20-year anniversary when we started filming, man.
Well, guys.
Let's do something.
Yeah, congratulations on, honestly, like, an amazing career. Like, yeah, no.
And
but
everything
like,
up ahead.
You've changed the culture. You've maintained control of your creativity. And it's really outstanding. So congratulations.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Appreciate y'all, man.
Sure, definitely.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste Time with It's the Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about us, if people want to find out more about this podcast, if people want to come to our show on November 2nd at the Bootleg Theater in Los Angeles, where can they go?
You can go wait in line outside of the Bootleg Theater in Los Angeles, or you can get tickets on itsthereal.com. Tickets are available on itsthereal.com. You can also go to soundcloud.com/awasteoftime and listen to all of our old episodes of our podcast. And you can also stream them on iTunes, where you can search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Search for It's the Real, ITSTHERREAL, all one word, no apostrophes, no spaces. We are also on Twitter at It's the Real, Facebook at It's the Real, Instagram at It's the Real, Snapchat, we don't use it, don't follow us there, but if you want to, we are It's the Real there. And you can always find our music on soundcloud.com/itsthereal, also on Spotify and any streaming service. Search for Teddy Bear Fresh by It's The Real.
You guys know that this podcast is not going to grow. We are always going to be the underdogs unless you spread the word, tell your friends, tell your family, and tell strangers on the streets.
Tell that guy from Long Island.
It's The Real. A waste of time with It's The Real. That's the podcast you need to listen to right now. Jeff, what friend do you want to tell?
I want to tell three friends.
Okay.
Maybe four.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to tell Them Jeans.
Okay.
Also known as Jason Stewart. I'm going to tell Nicki Jaggerman.
Okay.
In L.A. I'm going to tell Chris Black.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell David Cho.
Well, David Cho, spread the word. I, Jeff, would like to shout out once more our friend Tyler C's up in North Idaho, but I want to shout out his wife.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. C's.
Yeah.
For dealing with her husband, going around and shouting to the moon about a waste of time with It's The Real because we shouted him out in last week's podcast.
He literally ran around his house screaming because... We shouted him out.
I just wish there were more people in North Idaho that would hear him. Because what I imagine is that he's got a ranch mm-hmm. out there in North Idaho.
Yeah.
And that to spread the word, it takes a little journey into the town, into that one stoplight town.
Yeah.
To tell all the miners and all the people at the country store.
Yeah, he hitches his horse to the post.
And
he tells
all the folks at the Daily Tribune about a waste of time with It's The Real on this funky technology called the podcast. Shout out to our friends up there in Coeur d'Alene, North Idaho.
Yeah, Tyler wants us to come to Coeur d'Alene. We are honestly going to put Coeur d'Alene on the map because I don't know that there are actual maps of North Idaho.
Well, Jeff, we swung our pickaxes when we were doing videos.
We worked the fields with the hose.
We never died of syphilis out on the Oregon Trail.
But I did get dysentery when we did our music.
We were nothing if not pioneers. Now for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys next week.